Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel. And today we have Nick Najjar of ACS Communities and Elephant Capital Partners on the show. Let's dive in. Nick is the principal and owner of ACS Communities and Elephant Capital Partners, overseeing six manufactured housing communities with a total of just under 300 lots. ACS Communities also holds minority partnerships in various mobile home parks across the United States and has completed over 25 acquisitions in the sector. Elephant Capital Partners is one of the more well-known mobile home park wholesalers in the space, or you know, they complete assignments of contracts. And Nick leads all aspects of the business from business development, acquisitions, operations, property management, and so forth. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Glad to be here again.
Dude, so it's been 2 years. March 2022, you were on the show, shared your story. We didn't really go into a lot of the wholesaling stuff last time, but let's talk. What has happened since 2022 with you in the business?
Oh man, so much. So first of all, let's maybe not use the word wholesaling. I think that unfortunately it has a negative connotation in real estate, right? Single family stuff, our business, it's a little more common. It has a little more positive image. But at the end of the day, the way I look at it is, you know, strategic partnerships. So we have one of my best friends, he's a mobile home park operator. We buy parks for him. We help him buy communities. And, you know, we play matchmaker, real similar to what a broker would do. And that's just the way that I like to, you know, we buy parks with strategic partnerships. So,
nice.
Been buying parks. probably bought a couple communities since. I don't remember how many I had then. I have six now, and we got 300 contract here and a couple more, opportunities for folks to buy. Maybe we'll use the word wholesale because it's easier, but I just want to make a point there, right? I think sometimes it does have negative spin. What do you think, Andrew? Is there a negative?
I think it does. Yeah, because if you think of like wholesaling and wholesalers, and there's definitely like a stigma there around like, oh, you know, kind of, especially from the single family business, you know, because there's so many of them and they kind of, yeah, it can give you like a bad taste in your mouth when you think of a wholesaler. But yeah, I think when you look at it from the commercial side of things, you know, it's more common like to assign commercial deals, assignments, you know, is a very common thing that happens between, you know, commercial investors and things like that and brokers. So yeah, I think it's a niche, right? As with anything, and you're playing matchmaker. So, you know, there's wholesalers that do it right. Right. Where they're, you know, they're finding true value in off market deals that actually have value add. And then there's others that kind of stretch it and kind of, I think, annoy us. Right. Like, you know, they post the same deal that's not really a deal in the Facebook group like five times a week. And you're like, dude, like if it was a deal, it would have, you know, flown off the shelf. You know, there's stuff like that happens that you kind of, you know, you just kind of snarl your nose up at. But, you know, like for myself, we have a deal right now that we're sending out, but like we looked at this as a buy and hold, like we fully underwrote it. Like we're, you know, probably three quarters of the way through due diligence. And we just decided, hey, you know, there's a little bit too much risk here. There's some older homes. And we're like, hey, why don't we just send it out to our list of other operators? This may be a good fit for someone else. It's a more stabilized deal. We want something with a little more hair on it that we can add value to. And see if, you know, we can generate some income to offset some of our costs, right? Our marketing costs and labor costs for the sales team. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about, you know, assignments and wholesale.
I like it. And I think the word is deal assignments. I think that's a little more professional, right? And I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of bad apples that make our business harder. And it's not just wholesalers or guys. I think there's a lot of guys that call these park owners and they'll put a property under contract, not maybe they didn't go to the Frank Brawl boot camp. You know, they don't know what they're doing. And almost every time, right? Hey, I'm under contract for $4 million. And the numbers just don't make sense. Like, even if they pay cash, the numbers don't make sense. I'm like, okay, I'll call you in 2 months. And that actually happened recently. Unfortunately, I wasn't the one that called him in 2 months. A friend of mine got into the deal and he's under contract on it. And I'm glad it's him. I told him that, but you know, it's just part of the business. So yeah.
What's funny about it is like, it's actually a close knit, like mobile home park investors, a pretty small, you know, group. And, you know, we had a deal recently that, like, you know, when someone decides to sell, it's like, okay, it's on. Like, we're in active negotiations. We're talking with this seller. And sure enough, in one of the Facebook groups, you know, pops up, hey, you know, anybody interested in a deal in this city, in this state? And I was like, that's curious. That's where this deal is that we're talking to. And sure enough, while we're in active negotiations, another wholesaler called this guy and now is, you know, doing the same thing, having negotiations as well. So we're like negotiating against ourselves. So it's parks, I think, one, you know, because we also have assigned, you know, self-storage, and it's just been, parks have been getting more and more competitive, you know, in my eyes. I'm sure, you know, you've seen some of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's an interesting game. It's not as easy as people think it is. We were kind of talking about that a little bit offline. I mean, I like what you said. I mean, that is the main reason I started the deal assignments, was to offset our overhead. That, you know, we got full-time staff and a team that underwrites our deals and all the things that, you know,
you
I don't have time to do, and somebody's got to do it. So it's and one man's trash is another man's treasure, right? I think about that all the time. And I've been thinking about different ways we can serve smaller community owners. Because if you think about, most brokers only really work with maybe 700,000 purchase price and higher, because there's only so many listings that they can take if they're specialized in our, you know, mobile home park business, right? So I just think there's a massive opportunity to help smaller community owners, 20 lot, 30 lot owners. And that's where I see us adding a lot of value with those deal assignments. So,
and right now, I think that's a good opportunity, right? Like, strategically, if you are targeting those smaller parks and you can make it work from a management standpoint, you know, I think you can get into these deals at, you know, 10 plus cap rates on actuals. Like, there's opportunity there, right? There's a lot of mom and pops that own those smaller parks, and it can make sense. But let's go back. You mentioned something that, you know, we mentioned before we started recording, how assigning mobile home park deals is a lot. It's very difficult compared to assigning other asset classes. Like, we did some self-storage, and, you know, it's metal boxes, right? Like, it's very straightforward, you know, with the product that we're delivering to the end buyer. In mobile home parks, these are 50 plus year old assets with utility infrastructure that's old and deferred maintenance from mom and pops, and people live on these things, right? This isn't, you know, self-storage. They just come, they drop off, you know, their Christmas decorations, and then, you know, they come back a year later, you know, in November to put their lights up, and they pull it out. You know, in mobile home parks, people live there. They're there all the time, and there's a lot of different personalities with the tenants and backgrounds and things like that. So deals fall out a lot of the time, right? So we were talking, like, we only say that, hey, on our parks that we're assigning, there's probably a 50% chance that it, you know, closes up until the day before closing, because it, you know, things have happened and it just kind of flakes out. Where on our self-storage assignments, it's been very different. You know, there's a more sure chance of the deal going through because of the asset type. What are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I'll share we have a deal, been under contract for talking about how long it takes too. I don't even know how long. I mean, I probably a year, right? We're end of, supposed to close in February. You know, we are now, you know, May. We're like pretty much there. We're like, hey, last thing on our due diligence list is inspection of septic tanks. And by the way, too, the reason it took so long, like a lot of deals, like, this was an assumption of a seller carry note. So we had to, you know, get an attorney to get the original seller, the person holding a note, to agree to consent to us buying the property. And then just basically getting creative with that structure. Like, hey, they want to sell, we want to buy it. How do we bridge that gap? We can't put new debt, you know, debt right now, 8.25 is our bank loan that we have closed in a couple of weeks. Like the deal, most deals don't work at that number. So you kind of have to get creative with assumptions and stuff. So anyway, long and short, we go through our thing and week before closing, you're like, let's just double check the septic tank. They're all failing. Literally.
Oh my goodness.
There's like 3 good ones out of 11. 8 are failing. So it's like, we're looking to tap into the city and then we have to call the seller and ask for price reductions. Like literally the conversation was, just so you know, like you're one tenant away from calling the EPA and shutting you down completely. Right. That's how bad it was. Right. And I know you had my buddy, Steve Edel and Justin on due diligence partners the other week. And it's like, he has his deal killers that are there and they're always there. And a lot of times you don't even know until you camera the sewer lines or do all these things. And unfortunately, some of these mom and pop sellers and even professional operators aren't honest. And it's like, you gotta like check the boxes. And, you know, we got another deal that we're working on and he's like, oh, the phase one's clean. And I was like, okay, just kind of wrote it off. No big deal. And then I read it and I'm like, this doesn't look right. It's not clean, but it's like, basically there's a gas station there and the gas station's cleaning it up. And they didn't order phase two back at the time he bought it because of they were already regularly taking soil samples at the property. I'm like, okay, like, you and I could probably literally come up with 50 other things that have happened in the past 3 years, similar to that, right? It's just always something, always issues. You know, before you were on too, we were talking about operational issues. Like, it's a never ending thing. Like, I always issues. Every property has some issues. I don't know any owner that, like, I don't have any issues with the property, right? Like, it doesn't happen.
Because you manage all yours in-house, right? Like you're directly.
Well, no, actually. So about a year and a half ago, we started working with Stephen and David Blank, Blank Family Communities. And, you know, I guess the short version of that story is I got in this business because Frank Rolf is like, oh, it's a great passive investment and blasting from passive, right? And I was like, we had a couple key staff leave. And I was like, man, this is not, you know, we had 8 employees at time, like, this is just not my thing. I'm a deal guy, and I've recognized, like, I went to Dan Sullivan's strategic coach event, like, my unique ability is doing deals. So I don't have any interest in, you know, pushing a lot of the buttons that our team does today. And anyway, they manage our communities. I'm still involved, like, no matter who's managed. You were talking about, you have a pulse on every property. I'm sure every week you look at something, and it's, you have to pay attention to all the dials every week, because you let 6 weeks go by, and I've seen communities flip in as quick as 2 months, you know,
quick.
Lose a couple residents, don't fill them, lease up the new ones quick. And then you're just like, man, what happened? You know? So,
yeah, it's a lot to manage, to be on it. You have to be on the ball, and it's, you know, it's management intensive, but so at a high level,
real quick, cause I told you this when we talked a couple weeks ago, and I just want to acknowledge you here on your podcast, because you and I went to a boot camp at same time, I think 7-8 years ago down in Orlando. And I remember we went the same time. And then ironically, I went back. And when I went back, Frank had you up on stage and he's like, hey, here's Andrew Keel. He owns 6 communities and he bought them in this past year. And like, who is this guy? And then I seen you grow. I remember, you know, specifically you sharing your goals. And I think you surpassed those goals now. And I think it's a testament to your, you are an amazing operator, like very good. I get your newsletters. You're like, we just leased up 16, brought in 16 homes. I'm like, 16 homes? Like, that's crazy. So anyway, just wanted to give you some props, man. You do a good job. So.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah. And I couldn't do it without the team. Like, it's like you said, I know my strength and I know, you know, what I'm good at, but there's a lot of stuff I'm not good at. And like, it's just all about building that team and having good partnerships. So same with you, you know, with partnering with Stephen Blank and them, that's, you know, you got good people that know what they're doing. So that's important. Tell us about like your most recent deal, your most recent mobile home park deal. You know, have you any recent acquisitions? Like, how have you guys been getting deals done with, you know, interest rates being higher? You said 8.25 on your deal that's closing soon. Like it's not easy to buy a deal, right? Your cap rate, you know, has to be a couple percentage points above that, you know, to make this thing cash flow. So how are you guys getting deals done?
Yeah. So our last two I'll touch on. And I think the key is finding out what the seller really wants and then getting creative to make that happen. Sometimes there's loan assumptions. Usually it's seller finance. And most of the time, sellers don't realize their benefits of seller financing, right? They don't. We had a deal, negotiated it, $1 million purchase price, good deal. He before he signed the agreement, he brought it to his account. Like all the terms solidified, right? And then he brings it to his account. And he's like, he literally calls me. He's like, hey, my accountant tells me I'm going to have $300,000 of tax liability. Can you buy it for $1.3 million now? And I'm like, dude, we had a done deal, man. Anyway, so just kind of getting creative to figure out what that looks like. So our deal we closed I guess it was November, so 2 quarters ago. You know, just I can't remember exactly how it came about, but you know, he also didn't have any debt on it, and that always makes it a little bit easier to explain, you know, why seller finance is a benefit and all that. And then a lot of times for these sellers, it's monthly payments, right? So I'll just get out my commercial loan calculator and say, just throw out and like plug it in, you know, hey, if we give you, you know, $180,000 and then pay you $5,000 a month for the next 5 years, like, does that work?
Yeah.
You know, so that was the one. And then this one was we had to get really creative with it because we were going to do, he was a little upside down on the deal, actually, with some of the projects he had going and owed the bank like, say $1 million. And then anyway, I can't remember exact terms, but he was upside down on it. So we were actually going to do a lease purchase. And then his wife changed her mind. She's like, no, after we had drafted all the lease purchase agreements, and I had never done one. That's a big lease purchase. There's a lot of risk to that, right? It's not, you don't get the deed to close. It's just not ideal, but it was like a creative way. We thought we could get the deal done. Wife changed her mind. Then we renegotiated the terms. But basically this deal we have, fingers crossed, closed in about 2 weeks. We've been working on it for over 2 years now. $300,000 seller finance, really great terms. Like the first payment, zero. The first year, 0% interest. Second year is 3% interest only, all the way out to 8 years. Like, so we have a lot of time on this, you know, seller carry portion of the debt. And then I went to the bank. Fortunately, I've got some really good local bank relationships that I've been working on and nurturing for 5 years now. And I just asked. I'm like, well, I thought about it. I'm like, doesn't hurt to ask. So I just said, hey, seller's financing 300, you know, loan to value is, you know, here. Can we just, you know, do a zero down type deal? I can't remember exactly how I asked. They're like, we won't do that. But if you put $200,000 in the property, we'll do it. So that's kind of how it works. We don't have all the money that we're putting in this deal is going into CapEx on the property. So it's just a matter of like, you know, bridging the gap, right? Seller needed to sell, health conditions, like just needed to get out. We couldn't pay the amount that he wanted, but we were able to bridge that gap to like, you know, meet that. So hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been, you know, trying to do a lot of like seller carry second mortgages, you know, to get deals to work right now. And, you know, it's hard to like convince someone, you know, like to do that and be the bank, right? Like not everybody's just, you know, open to that. You know, you got to have a lot of rapport. You got to build a lot of trust. So I think it's, you know, displaying your track record of previous deals is important, you know, to be able to show them, hey, I've done, you know, previous seller financing arrangements with, you know, XYZ people and give them, you know, references to call has been one way that we've been able to get sellers to consider this and actually do it. So tell us, Nick, you know, from a high level, what has been like your biggest takeaway in mobile home park investing in the last, you know, 12 to 24 months? Like what has been like your biggest aha, you know, or lesson learned type of thing?
Well, real quick, I saw it on the seller carry just because you mentioned it and it's like a little self-promotion. But on our website, we actually have 16 benefits of seller carry financing. So if anybody wants to see it, it's elephantcp.com resources. So we'll typically share some of those things with sellers if they don't get it.
Nice.
Man, that's a really good question. There's so many. One of the things I love about this business is there's always a new challenge, always something. I'm learning something new literally almost every day. Like yesterday, I learned that in the state of Missouri, it only takes five days to evict someone in a long-term RV, like in an RV park. Like we're buying RVs. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like RV parks even more, right? And it's, I guess they're considered like a vehicle. So you got like you only have 5 days to move the vehicle off the property kind of thing. So anyway, just little stuff like that. There's always learning things that I'm learning. Okay, you asked me like a loaded question. What was the question?
Yeah, I would just say like your biggest takeaway from mobile home park investing. You know, think of the listeners. We got a lot of passive investors. We got a lot of active operators. You know, I'm learning stuff every day as well. Like the team, right? And building the team. And you know, I get excited, right? And I'm less patient, for example. So I bring on a new team member and I just like overload them with stuff. I just like throw them in and they're like drinking from a fire hose. And, you know, now I've learned it's like, hey, I'm going to bring you in and you're going to master, you're going to become a Jedi ninja at this one thing. And when you learn that and you're a Jedi ninja, then we can talk about doing something else. But I don't want you on any meetings or anything until you've mastered this one part of the business that's going to add real value. And that's like one thing that I've picked up, you know, within the property management company is we had people overlapping, you know, which again, you can't really have people, you know, segregated out into individual tasks until you have scale, right? Like in the beginning, it was me. I was opening the mail. I was, you know, putting the checks in the bank and doing everything. But now as we have gotten bigger with 45 communities, it's, you know, we've been able to build out a pretty big property management company. And that's another thing that people don't really talk about is, you know, our property management company itself does not make money every month, you know, and I know we talked about this previously, but like the property management company, you know, it's expensive to have payroll and all of that, but that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down. But
well, yeah. And our quote unquote deal assignment businesses don't make money either, right? They at least for me, they're loss leaders. Like that, we just do it and we do the assignments just to cover our overhead to hit our acquisition goals. So, yeah. So here, two things that come to mind. One is that it is really hard to find deals, but the deals are out there. So it's all about volume. Like you got to look at a lot of deals. We do like 1,000. Actually, 50, we got an intern now. Which is great. Junior in college, she got a 34 as an ACT. Will, props to you, Will. I'm excited for you to be a part of the team. You know, he's going to be doing cold calling while hopefully if he likes it while he's back at school too, just to make some extra income. Our other lead guy, Jasper, who's awesome. You know, 1,000 cold calls a week is his goal. You know, 20 contacts a day. Like, it's all about volume and it's all about looking at deals. So, you know, looking at broker deals are always tough, right? Because it's just very competitive, but we still are looking at those and the ones that fit our criteria, we're underwriting them. We're making offers because you got to make, I don't have the exact numbers, but it's something like, you know, for every 10 offers we make, we'll get something under contract, right? But it takes 100 contacts to make 10 offers. So it takes like 1,000 calls to get one deal, right? Like, that type of numbers. And that's, it's a volume game, right? And I'd be curious if you know those stats for what you guys do. So that's one thing. It's just a volume game. You just got to, their deals are out there. You just got to find them and you got to get creative to make it a win. And the other thing you mentioned operationally, one of the biggest game changers that we've made in our business is using Monday.com. It's similar to Asana.com. And then just recently, it was so funny because I was talking to David Blank and I was like, hey, man, I want to run EOS with our communities. Like I run EOS in my franchises and like EOS, that's how we get traction. We're not getting the traction that we want. Let's get traction. Let's run EOS. He's like, it's funny you mentioned that because I thought about it and let's try it. So now all of our issues are in the Monday system. Any projects and to-dos are in Monday. So our weekly calls, we're sticking and moving. We're knocking them out. They're letting me know that, hey, here's the things that, you know, Nick, we need your opinion on. Like, hey, this we got to resurface these roads. Of, you know, well, recently it wasn't a resurface. Like, there's a small section of gravel roads in one of our communities. $1,500 to fill the pothole, compact gravel, approved or not. Like, I just click a button, right? It's just easier.
It's streamlined. Yeah. Type of
thing. But there's so many moving parts, so many issues. It's just really good to put all those issues in one place, talk about them as a team if needed.
Let's talk about that real quick, you know, with using and working with a third party property manager, because I think that's really good. You know, you're still hands on, you know, into expenses and repairs, and there's a process for it. But what, you know, tell us about using a third party manager, right, to manage mobile home communities. I mean, there's not very many of them, but Blank Communities is one of the big ones. How's that been? What have some of the hurdles been? What have some of the, you know, the good sides of it been?
Yeah. Well, the good sides are, I think I had 8 employees when I lost 2 like key staff people, right? So I only had 5 communities, but 2 full-time people and a bookkeeper and then our community managers, right? It was just like, I lost the key staff. And then I was just like, I heard about them. I saw an ad in the MHU Insider and I just called Steven and, you know, we got along really well. I mean, you know, and it was a fit. You know, if I didn't have my other, you know, franchise businesses, I may have more bandwidth, but I just know what I'm good at and not the best at operations, but I do feel like I'm really good at asset management. I'm good at paying attention to the metrics. So, you know, I think anytime you convert management, anytime it's new ownership or you're converting management, it's about a 6-month thing, right? Like you got to, that first 3 months, just getting ready to pay the rent on time through the online payment board, right? Yeah. And it's like takes another couple months to get everything up and going. So, you know, and then, you know, like I said, I finally feel like we're hitting our stride, but I consider myself a full-time asset manager. Like I have full visibility into the entire organization. And every single week I look at our weekly reports, see where our move-in move-outs are. I see where our vacancy statuses. I then will look at our vacant units report from rent manager and see where we're at in our Monday system now. And that's been a big thing, is tracking our progress on rehabs through the Monday system, you know, looking at every single expense every single month. And just like, if there's an expense, we have one, it was like, we were paying for gas for a couple communities. Like the gas just didn't get converted. It was a manager that isn't the manager anymore. And like, for whatever reason, somebody moved in to one of our units. It was a park-owned unit. It was vacant. Had gas, didn't get hurt. It was like $600 a month. Like, okay, let's stop paying $600 a month. And a lot of it is usually little stuff, right? But even like Metron meter, one of our communities, like, I'm like, there's 20, it's a small community, it's 26 lots. Why are we paying for 34 meters every month? $6 a pop, you know, like little stuff like that. It all adds up, you know? So that
totally does.
Every month, looking at each individual expense, every week, getting into Monday, like where we have in these key projects and getting our vacant units moving forward. And, you know, to Blank's credit, I mean, everyone knows, I think at this point, operations is hard. Operations, any business is hard. Bowman Parks is probably a little bit harder than most businesses. Like I look at how easy it is to run our 5 magazine franchises compared to the 6 mobile home communities. It's like 10 times harder in the mobile home park world. Like but Blank does a great job. They're professional.
It's good.
They're institutional. They have a new controller in, which I'm super excited about. Our accounting has gone from okay to really good. And they're great. Like, it's good. I really.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Nick. If you were going to invest passively, you know, with your own cash into a mobile home park, you know, deal like a syndication, what would be like the most important things you would look for or do before wiring the money in for the deal?
It's all about the jockey. So I just turned 40. We were at the racetrack on Saturday and I was talking to somebody like the same week last week. And I was just thinking about, because I'm raising money in the deal and people ask me a lot of questions, right? And I want the questions. I'm open book. Like I know that that's really important. And it's all about the jockey. You got to trust the jockey. You got to feel good about the jockey. You got to rely on them. And you got to, you know, track record is really important. You know, I think Justin Donald was on your show, Lifestyle Investor. And I don't know the exact terms, but it's like I think they typically don't bring a deal unless somebody has 10 years experience in real estate. Like, just because like 10 years, like that's it. Like, unless you've been doing it for 10 years, unfortunately, they're not going to vet this deal and do their full due diligence and all that, just because they know that it's just kind of how it works, you know? So, I would probably run a background, you know, I'm not investing passively I started investing passively in other stuff outside of real estate, but if I were to do I probably run a background? Depends how much money I would be putting in, right? But mm-hmm. background check, you never know. I've seen stuff, especially in that group, we've seen stuff that comes up like, hey, we brought this deal, but our due diligence came back and there was an issue and, you know, we're not suggesting move forward on it anymore. So looking at asking questions like, you know, what are you doing to manage? What does that look like? What are the fees? You know, I see some of these groups, they just make money off of fees and then it's all projections and fees. And like, that's how people get burned. You know, it's like people just do deals. And I'm always hesitant on funds because, you know, when you look at those fees and you're like, oh, wow, that's 2% acquisition fee, 2% asset management fee, 8% property management fee. And I'm like, oh, these guys are making $250,000 in fees. They don't care how the deal performs, right? Those types of things. And, you know, I would ask other operators. So if somebody's in looking at a self-storage deal, probably floats the deal by at least three other professional self-storage operators. So if I wasn't in the mobile home park space, I'd say, hey, talk to Andrew Keel and, you know, these three other people, because get their opinion on the deal. You know, you and I both know probably within five questions whether a deal is good or not, just based off the experience we have in the amount of deals we've looked at.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think definitely ask for help. I've seen some new mobile home park operators they come across as operators, but they're really just money raisers, you know? And that's one thing, like, you know, you should know, hey, what's your part in this? What are you doing? Are you actually, you know, doing the asset management? Are you actually like doing the underwriting and looking at the due diligence? Or are you just a capital raiser, right? Like just meeting investors and advertising for investors and then, you know, having a conversation about the asset class and the benefits of it. You know, you should know if that is who you're investing your money with, or if you're actually talking to the operator, and just be aware of that. But
yeah, well, I also think one thing on that too, to give the new person credit, a lot of times they actually don't know, right? They don't know what they don't know. They don't know how hard it is to move and set a used home. Like, so if a market, you know, for us today, if there's a market, we can't sell a house for $200,000, we're probably not going to take on the big infill. It's just so hard to find used homes and bring them in. And like, people underwrite these deals, like bringing in 15 homes a year. I'm like, where are you going to get them from? You're going to sell 15 homes and the median home price is $120,000, you know, that type of thing. So
it's tough. Yeah. And another thing that I think is really important is understanding a quick value, because there's, you know, as an LP, there's a lot of ways you could look at the underwriting and say, wow, these things cash flow so great because they're capitalizing park-owned home income. They're, you know, keeping, you know, the manufactured homes as rentals and using them as like straight rentals. And, you know, and the cap rate looks like it's a 15 cap. But when you look at it like a bank looks at it off of the lot rent, you know, you just basically take the number of occupied lots times the current lot rent. Say you got 50 lots at 350 lot rent. Gives you $17,500 a month in gross revenue, times 12 is $210,000 a year in annual gross revenue. Typically, parks, you know, from what we've seen, have been around on public utilities are 40% expense ratio. So you take away 40% of the 210, brings you to $126,000 in NOI, and then to get a deal to pencil out right now with interest rates at 7.5-8%, you need to have a spread above that, right? So your cap rate has to be, you know, or have a foreseeable path to getting to a 9-9.5 cap at a minimum, you know, because there's low rents or you have infill or you have some sort of value add to get it up to, you know, a 9-9.5 cap to get a decent return. So I think just understanding that quick value, and even internally, we kind of like, with our underwriting, it started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was like, hold on, guys, we need to go back to the basics. Like, let's just look at the quick value. Does this deal make sense off of that? And I think if a lot of people did that, more people did that, they would know, okay, this is a deal, or wow, they are betting big and adding a lot of value on park-owned homes or vacant lots, you know, where they're like putting money. They're paying money for the vacant lots or for the homes. So what are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
I think I totally agree with you. A couple things that come to mind. You mentioned looking at deals. I think I see a lot of deals that have the wrong expense ratio, right? Yeah. You know, some people say, oh, it's direct bill utilities. So it's a, you know, a 30% expense ratio. I'm like, yeah, I've looked at probably 300 deals. I've never seen it. Like, it literally, you can't get there, right? The only way you really get there is probably if it's like a, you know, 180 site community. It's all direct bill, water, sewer, trash, you know? So, and that's even hard. So the expense ratio. And then also the only thing I would add to that, and I think that's great. You know, the napkin math is great. I was telling a friend this morning, we were talking about underwriting because we underwrite all our deals, but I tell her, like, be honest with you, the only reason I really underwrite deals with like a pro forma and like a spreadsheet is because that's what the banks want. And that's what our investors want. If it was just me buying on my own, I'd probably have a piece of paper and I'd do the exact same napkin math. And the only thing I would add to that is the end of movie, right? Because a lot of times, like, oh, the deal pencils, right? It's, we're going to buy it at a 9 cap, get it to a 12 cap, but then you only make like total investments, especially in these bigger deals, right? Total investment, $2 million. And then it's like, but you buy it at, you know, for $5 million and then you sell it for $8 million. And then you look at like, you put $2 million in, but it just doesn't, those numbers probably don't make sense, but hopefully the point makes sense. Like, it just doesn't, it's not worth it. The juice is not worth the squeeze. And then that's where the, well, it is worth the squeeze if somebody's making on those bigger deals, making 120 grand in an asset management fee every year. Like, yeah, I would do that too if I was not ethically, you know, you know what I'm saying, right? Like,
You're getting a fee, how it makes sense for you.
Beginning of movie, end of movie is a big one, and how much CapEx you need, because that can make a big difference.
Yeah. And the project management of the CapEx, right? It's one thing to have the money and say, okay, we're going to bring in 40 homes, but then you need to have a high level person in charge of that budget that is held accountable to staying within budget and, you know, consistently, making sure that they're saving money and not just, you know, blowing it, right? Like it's a lot of accountability that's important. Nick, let's talk about park-owned homes. Like, have you bought in some parks that have had a significant amount of park owned homes?
Oh yeah. All of them, right? Like those are where the deals are at. And you had asked me earlier, like one of the things you learn, I thought, you know what, that's been the biggest lesson, I think. Cause I look at the communities we bought. So one that was primarily park owned home community, I think it was like, 35 homes, right? And this one was 42 lots, 35 homes, all occupied. And these were like 90s and newer homes, right? And that property's been performing great. Similar community, different area, but homes in the 70s and 80s homes, right? And we're finding that we're churning residents a lot quicker, they're harder. It's just a big CapEx, right? Somebody leaves a 1982 trailer, 10 grand, if you're lucky, to get that thing to be able to sell it, right? You could probably find somebody that'll pay rent. We don't want renters, right? We want people on a path to home ownership. So, you know, the nice thing is that there's companies out there, you know, PEP, Zippy, 21st, where if you do it right, you can usually recoup your costs of the home, you know, that you put into these homes. But when you're underwriting deals, like looking at the age of home and, you know, Frank Ross Ideal, one of our partners came out, we did a site drive. We probably drove like 200 miles, drove 5 communities all around. And then we drove around St. Louis and I was telling about the Ideal investment. I remember Frank, like one of the biggest things I learned from the boot camp is like infrastructure, density, economics, age of home and location. That is a park. What is the infrastructure? Is it public utilities? Is it on a well or septic? How close are the homes together? How big are the lots in terms of density? Economics, you know, for us personally, it's 200,000 median home price, good median income, growing population. How close is it to Walmart? That's the easiest way to look at every deal I ever look at. Walmart, how far? How, you know, that'll tell you if it's a good deal or not, typically. And then where is that? You know, location and age of homes, though. That's the biggest one you got to be careful of. So
that's good. Yeah. No, park-owned homes can eat your lunch. You know, your NOI could look great, but if you're not, you don't have any cash flow at the end of the day because you're investing it all back into CapEx to rehab those vacant homes to get them sold again, you know, it's just a churning wheel and you're not making money. So, Nick, what do you think is the biggest threat facing mobile home park investing right now?
Facing investing or the asset class itself?
I think from an investing standpoint, like what's the biggest threat?
Yeah. So this is a passive investor podcast. The biggest thing I would look at is how people underwrite deals and their refinance, 5 years from now. I see people that make assumptions like we're going to buy it at a 7 cap and we're going to sell it at a 6 cap or buy it a, 8% rate and refinance at a lower interest rate. The way I look at it is just, I tip, and I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I just assume an entry cap is the same as the exit cap. And I assume the interest rate at refi is the same as the interest rate at purchase. So I'm curious, is that a good thing in your mind or would you even be more conservative with that?
No, I think that's good. I think we do the same. It's just, it's tough to hold a crystal ball and guess what the future is going to look like. I think you have to just predict the exit cap to be the same as the entry cap. So
yeah. And I think with our asset class, affordable housing, right? It's funny. I was talking to a gal on Monday, actually, and she's like, she was talking to a home builder and they're talking about rising home costs. Like it's going to add like 15,000, like city, something was going to add $15,000 every home. And, this world is going to the Blackstones of the world owning 50,000 single family homes and they're renting these homes and just the, yeah. People aren't going to be able to buy houses. It's just where it's going. It is what it is. But the beautiful thing about what we do is we provide an amazing, affordable housing opportunity that it's just great. I mean, the demand will always be incredibly, insanely high. The lot rents will always be half of what they should be, maybe even a third of what they truly should be, right? So as an investor, you're always going to typically make your money and raise lot rent and, increase the income that way and asset appreciation, right? I remember talking about Steve again. I've learned so much from Steve, though. I mean, he did due diligence on our first 4 or 5 communities and we had a lot of mutual friends. And, he's like, Nick, if I could go back and do it all over again, like I'd never really understood asset appreciation, like how these assets actually appreciate over time. Mm. And that's just a beautiful thing about it. But I'd say the biggest threat is the interest rate environment and just general economy, if I had to pick one thing.
That's good. Nick, how can our listeners get a hold of you if they'd like to do so?
Yeah, best thing is the website. So elephantcp.com. Elephant like the big animal with tusks, and then CP for capital partners.
Elephantcp.com. Cool. We'll put that in the show notes. Thank you for coming on, Nick, and sharing all these golden nuggets with us.
Always love talking shop with great operators like you, man. So happy to be here.
Thanks again, Nick. That's it for today, folks. If you got any value out of the show, I would ask you please leave a review. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Would you like to see Mobile Home Park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting for photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.